everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. One of the more difficult things that I find that men have to deal with is change. It seems that change is very difficult for some men, whereas for others, it's kind of easy. It goes along. So I was looking back in some of the strategies of the human pair bond and trying to understand what is the difference between men and women when it comes to change. What is the difference? Maybe we could look through our reptilian brain and see what we could find there and how we're programmed to either seek or resist change. Because if you think about it, you know, we could have only existed humans could have only existed if they had decided to seek change by traveling out from one place where there wasn't enough food, and every animal will, under duress, seek out change. So what happens in your relationship when you feel that duress and you feel that pressure? Sometimes the pressure comes from the outside. Sometimes you could have pressure at your job, and your job could be so bad that you go home and say, I want change. You know? And if you're lucky, you got a little kid that gives you 15 cents. He says, here's some change, Daddy. But because, you know, you get so fed up with the frustrations of not being able to control things that you go where you can control. And you try to make changes in the place where you can control things. That's when the stuff comes from the outside. So when the pressure is from the outside, sometimes you bring the pressure to your intimates. You go to the people you love the most. You go to your home, your children, your mother, your father, or they go to you. And they bring the pressures from the outside to the home and demand changes in the home that are going to make them feel a little safer than they do outside. So, for example, a woman under duress from a job might go home and say, this house is filthy. Whereas it may not have bothered her before, now she wants to set down a new rule that everybody has to clean all the time. Because she wants to be able to exercise her control. Pressures from the outside. Pressures from the inside, too. Any number of things. And we're learning more and more about the role of hormones and neurotransmitters in the human body could easily dictate a need for change. What's it about? It's almost, I think we're just beginning to get some idea of it, of how important it is. But you've all known about times when you feel more sensitive than other times, and you know something is going on with you physically. You could be tired. And when you're tired, you could be making arguments with people that you don't have to make arguments with. But, you know, you just the tiredness is running you. You could be hormonally imbalanced. You could be irritated. You could have any number of things. You could have too much coffee, too much partying late at night. And it makes you different in temperament. And then that temperament goes to the person you love the most, your mate, and you say, we got to change things. Instead of we have to change the inside because we feel powerless with the inside of our bodies. There are a number of ways to resolve conflicts. And today, I want to show you how to negotiate strategies for changing conflicts or solving conflicts in your relationship. But before we do, I'd like to go back onto a little history. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Let's think about how we kind of grew into this place, coming out of our, you know, simian ancestry into the humans that we are today. Most female mammals, including humans, carry the reproductive burden, they do, of the species. They invest time and energy into pregnancy, birth, nursing, and the raising of offspring. The female reproductive success depends on the quality of her choice of mate. She decides when she will mate, how often, and with whom. That's the role of the female in all mammals. A female may seek males with significant resource or males with superior genes. Female influences the evolution of their species by choosing which males will mate and pass on their genes to the next generation. Now, on the one hand, so the female has to select from the male, and she has what she has developed, is she has developed the ability to offer a reward for this. The reward is, I offer you sex. I offer you if you will be my right choice and behave in the right kind of way. Let's look at the male determination. In the animal species where the female exhibit visible signs of estrus, that means when you know that the female is in heat, a male knows when his mate is ovulating, and he can ensure he could be the only one to be with her. He can keep all the other males away. With humans, however, ovulation is concealed, making it difficult for human males to guarantee the paternity of offspring. Now, this is a very important factor in humans. Men's jealousy is usually around guaranteeing the paternity of the offspring. Male jealousy is, don't you let no other man near my woman. Because the worst thing that could happen for me as a male is that I'm bringing up somebody who's got the DNA of somebody else. My job as a male is to pass along my DNA. So this fear of a man having somebody else bring the offspring to his family, that's a huge thing. It controls men's behaviors. And men have employed many cultural strategies to discourage a woman from being available to other men. They've done everything, including some of the horrors you hear about genital mutilation and these men's ideas of you've got to cover a woman up so she can't be seen. You have to hide her. You have to forbid her to go out there. All for the same fear, I'm afraid. Now, if you get tempted to pass moral judgment on these strategies, I want to remind you that the cultural mechanism for guarding paternity is a consequence of our biology, male and female. The human race would not exist without this. This is the way we developed. But, you know, sometimes we get on to a point where we say, I don't just want to be following the same rules that every animal before me follows. I'd like to make some change. I'd like not to be on automatic. Possible. Very difficult for men. Let's examine the difference in emotional intelligence. Just go to emotional intelligence. Women, in contrast to the male obsession with paternity, right? That's what men are obsessed with. Females never worry about maternity. They know that their genes will be passed on to their offspring, so they have no worries whatsoever. Females are more concerned about eliminating bad mate choices, which have a high reproductive opportunity cost. So women talk to each other about everything under the sun, but they especially talk about men. Do you ever wonder why women talk about men so much? Because this is part of the way it was built. The way it was built is if you talk about the men, you're going to learn who's the best choice and who's not the best choice and what you may not be seeing and what you may be seeing. So this discussing, this communication about the opposite sex for women is essential in the survival of the species. You're born that way. That's why two people getting their nails done could talk endlessly about their husbands, their mates, and the guy around the corner and the pool boy. You know, you could be talking about all of that. The human female is engaged from childhood onwards in intimate individual and group discussions with other females. By adulthood, every woman has countless hours of such discussions under her belt, much more than the male does. The female has developed human relationship skills that the male doesn't even know exist yet, because men don't talk like this. They don't talk about what they feel. They don't talk about what goes on with them. They don't talk about the I always used to think, you know, women would quite often say, I know when he gets together with his buddies, all they do is talk about us wives and tear us down. Never. Men don't talk about women. Why do you want to talk about women? You're together with your male friends. It's almost the last thing they would talk about. Women, on the other hand, do talk about men. And keep in mind, this is the biological imperative. This is the way it's supposed to be. In fact, probably the reason that men don't talk about their women is they don't want other men to be attracted to their women. It's back to that thing, you know, of guaranteeing your paternity. Now, I'm not going to tell you about how great my wife is. You may be attracted to her. Keep that private. So it becomes like a double standard. The woman has relationship skills that the man doesn't even know anything about. And it becomes a way to guarantee paternity. Women have a greater sexual capacity than men. This capacity is tempered by reproductive cost, as well as sexual double standard. Women may have a greater, they could have, a woman could have sex with 10 different men, 20 different men in a day. She certainly can. She doesn't necessarily get exhausted, but the whole idea of childbirth, being pregnant, and being put out of the loop of sexual is just like a natural control over it. From a strategic perspective, we want to look at this kind of outcome between the two. So let's say a man and a woman live together, and the woman, who has great talking, communicating, negotiating skills, wants to talk to her mate. And he has no idea what you're talking about. What are all these words doing here? And when men who talk to their therapists about their mates, they talk about how much their mates talk. They do. How many words can you fit? And especially when the words are all about you, 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 and yesterday and tomorrow and you always and you never. Those things that are kind of men, it kind of confuses men. Women send signals to men that, you know, I'm going to give you the great reward of being bonded to you, but they hold all the cards except one. To counteract the great imbalance of power, which is the woman's holding on to the sexuality, men have force, physical, legal, monetary force, to control virtually all resources besides sex. So there's the balance. The man is in charge, he's got the money. The woman's in charge, she's got the sex. What a racket. Who's wrong? You know, give the men the power of the sex and give the women the power of the money. I don't think the men would complain. I don't think the women would complain. Maybe we should reverse the roles a little bit. Not a bad idea. We should take a vote on that. Men don't talk to each other about their emotions and their sexuality, whether due to biological or social influences. Human males have less emotional intelligence than do females. Men's ability to discuss their feelings, to be emotionally expressive, to read nonverbal communication and facial expressions are less developed than those of women. Women talk to each other much more than men do. It may surprise some men, but women talk extensively among themselves. The contrast between male and female groups could not be more dramatic. So due to this female choice, men are outranked in negotiating. They just don't know what to do. She says she has all of these communication skills, all the evidence, all the stuff, and he doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't know what to do in turn. His best thing is, I'll hit you over the head. That's his best weapon. I don't know what to do. Today, I want to talk about negotiation. The difference in emotional intelligence between men and women produces an unadvertised dynamic during most relationships. Each man feels like he's negotiating alone against all of womankind. Like Freud said, what do they want anyway? You know, he said, it's like it's not just her, it's all women to every man. You know, each man feels like he's completely alone fighting off woman in general. Every relationship experience that a woman has with a man can be immediately supported to her emotional support network of female acquaintances. So women could talk to each other about what's going on, but the man can't talk about the problems he's having with his wife or his relationship. So we get to this problem. The only source, the only way a man can survive a negotiation is to either overpower or give in. What's he to do? Is this what you want? Every man, whoever gives in to the demands of someone whose only weapon they have is to withhold love, right? That's what they say. I will stop loving you unless you change. And with that goes sex, affection, tenderness, everything. What I will do unless you give me what I want is I will be mean towards you. I will cut you off. I'll treat you like you don't exist. Now, that's withholding love. Where did you ever hear that before? You know where you heard that before? You heard it from your parents. That's the way parents deal with kids. I had a group of men the other day, and I was talking to this group of men, and I said, so where does this happen where negotiating always felt bad? And they said, each one of them said, with our parents. Our parents would tell us to do things. And the threat was, if we didn't do it, we didn't have a mother anymore. She just shut off. No more kisses, no more hugs, no more nice sunny, no more this stuff. No more good stuff. No, mom had the power to tell us what to do, or they would withhold love. So would dad withhold love. They had the power to cut us out, to send us to our room. We couldn't send them to their rooms. So when you think about the power that men feel intimidated by, right, when they have a mate who's trying to make a demand of them, they are faced with this entire childhood of having lost love for having tried to fight back for themselves. The only thing left is to give in. But every man who ever gives in to an emotional demand that is backed by the withdrawal of love develops hatred. He hates the woman who does it. Don't say the withdrawal of love. Don't say you're threatening me with that, so therefore I give in, so therefore I have to buy you a house, so therefore I have to get you a new car. That's not the way. In the same way with women. When a man demands something of women and he demands that he's going to withdraw a part of himself and he's going to go out and see other women or go hanging out or not come home, the same, if that's the threat that gets you what you want, it isn't worth it because you're going to be hated. I know many couples where hatred is very present because of negotiations. If they last, if their relationship lasts. So what's the alternative, my friends? What are the alternatives? There are alternatives to this. You don't have to get into this heavy battle. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. There are different things you could do to solve stuff in your relationship. One thing for sure, I guarantee you. If you're trying to negotiate something for a change in a relationship with someone you know, make an offer. Say, I would like this change, and here is what will get better if I make this change. Here's what I would like. Don't just say, I will love you, I will stop loving you less. You know, if you're going to withdraw love, that's not going to work. You're going to get what you want, but you're going to pay for it later. So let's look at what makes people not solve conflicts in relationships. Here are some of the negotiation strategies. Number one, if you want something from your mate, don't just blurt it out. Prepare a negotiation. Think about it. The best bet, write it down. If you can't write it down, I don't trust it as much as if you could. Because if you do write it down, that means you're going to think it out. Sometimes demands are impulses. You know, and a man comes home and he's feeling weak and he's feeling tired or he's feeling drunk and he says to his wife, do this for me. Think about it first. If you're looking to get a change, if you're trying to get your mate to be different than your mate is, or get your mate to do something they won't naturally do, prepare. Prepare. Think about it. Say to yourself, you know, I'd really like things to be different between the two of us. I'd like us not to watch television every night when we eat dinner. I'd like something to be different. Prepare that you're going to negotiate with your partner. Number two, when you're preparing, prepare an offer that your mate would like. Something that they would like. Don't say, oh, let's have a romantic dinner. When the guy comes home from work and all he wants to do is park himself in front of a TV and eat food, he may not find that a reward. But if you were to say, you know, we'll do this and we'll have a dinner tonight and we won't talk very much. We'll just relax and then later we'll watch TV together. Something that offers something. Number two, a good rule about negotiating is don't cave in too quickly to avoid tension or keep the peace. There are many people I know, especially men, who are peacekeepers. Whatever they want, you could have it. I know one story about a man. This is a recent story. It's become a code word. He drives a car. It's a small car, but it's his car, and he travels a lot with his car, and he sees a lot of business people with his car because he's a sales guy. His girlfriend wants him to put a bicycle rack on his car. She wants him to put a bicycle rack so that he could bring her bicycle from his house to her mother's house and then back and forth when she's staying with him. But it means he'd have to have a bicycle rack on his car all the time. And he's got a small car. And the bicycle rack would look really funny, especially when he shows up at his business meetings where he's trying to sell people something and prove that he's a worthy person, and he just feels bad about it. Something about it doesn't feel right. So I was with a group of men who discussed this bicycle rack concept. You know, what do? Give in? All right, take the bicycle rack. You can have it on the car, and I'll walk around with this bicycle rack and not feel bad about it. Or I'll feel bad about it, but if it makes you happy, I'll give it to you. No. Don't give in too quickly, friends. Third, rule number three is if you meet resistance with what you want, don't become stubborn and push too hard. Back off and ask yourself, what do I need to add? If you're trying to buy something from somebody and you're trying to say to somebody, look, would you give me your lamp and I'll give you my cup? And they say, no, I don't want the lamp. I don't want your cup for my lamp. You say, what if I give you my cup plus my pen? And they say, well, okay, your cup and your pen, that makes sense for my lamp. You see, you negotiate. You try to offer a little more. Try to make something in there that might be more satisfactory to the other person. Why learn to negotiate with your partner? You know, conflict is inevitable for growth in your relationship. If you don't have conflict, there's no growth. But when these relationships grow, my friends, oh my gosh, when you and your mate can be at loggerheads. You know what loggerheads are? You don't know. It's a logging term. Loggerheads, you mean stuck in the river and you just can't move. When you're stuck and you can't get through it, and then you do get through it, oh my gosh, the willingness to change, the ability to negotiate brings you closer and closer and closer. And there are relationships, my friends, that you can almost hope your entire life for when you find somebody who's willing to change. Willing to. And they listen. Very valuable stuff. There's a love, I believe, that people will never know, which is the love of being in a collaborative relationship with somebody who is willing to change so that you could be invested and closer rather than walk away, because it's always easy to walk away. One thing that's different between negotiation, once you learn to negotiate, you won't be afraid of conflict. Good negotiation leads to acceptable solutions. If it's conflict, let it be conflict for a little while. It doesn't have to be solved all at once. The difference between negotiation with couples and other negotiations, it is different. When it's with your partner, it feels especially risky because they could do that family thing. They could withdraw love. I'm not going to love you. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm not going to talk to you nice. I'm not going to say nice words to you. The amount of emotional self-disclosure required is much higher for couples than in business. So when you have to open your heart and your mate is going to step on it because they're just in a mood to step on hearts, you know, it's really brutal. But you got to be willing to take that risk. It requires skills for negotiating with your partner. Effective negotiation for complex problems requires a lot of openness about yourself, curiosity about your partner's issues, and emotional risk. It especially takes listening well. Now, listening well is where you could easily fall down. When your mate says, "I need this," how stupid not to think, and I've been this kind of stupid in my life many times. Why? Why do you need this? What does it do for you that you don't have now? What do you need that you don't have? Can you tell me? Can you show me where that is in your personality? Can you show me what this is for you that you need from me? Why we forget to ask is amazing. Sometimes we think the only way to get what we want is to just battle on and fight. But ask why. And then not only ask why, ask your partner why they won't give it to you when they won't. Say, what is it about this that touches you? Don't assume you know. Don't assume you know it's all about maleness or it's all about dominance or it's all about anything. Ask the question. Oh, my friend, if we could get to that point, we become magnificent. But we forget, once we get the confrontation, we think we're at war. Once we're at war, we think there's nothing else to do but resist or give in. You forget about the love. And as I said, if you have a history with your family of learning that there is no love to be given to you one way or another, or if you had somebody who was never, you had to determine everything yourself, you had to live your own life, and there was no supportive parent, or if there was a parent who was conditionally supportive, you don't know how to negotiate. You just don't. You don't. You don't know how to offer. You don't know how to get. You don't know how to ask for. I know a woman who has two children who ask her all the time for things. I notice the way she listens to them. She pays attention to them. She gives some things and doesn't give others. But she listens. And she's a loving, beautiful mother. And the kids love her too. And the kids love her so much that when she says to the kids, "I want you to take B12. She's a horrible vitamin, B12, isn't it? No, it's not a horrible vitamin. One of them tastes bad. As a kid, I remember. They want you to take this thing that makes you, you know, you might listen. Say, "Ma, really?" And Ma may say, "Yeah, it's good for you." And the kid says, "I know you love me. I'll do it." Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I'm going to help you a little more with this art of negotiating in relationships and probably take a couple of your calls as well. Telephone number here is 212-209-2800. We'll take a short break and come right back. 2900. Sorry, 212-209-2900. I'll be right back.
Hi, this is Lloyd Price, and you're tuned to WBAI New York. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio.
Okay.
Oh, now, Lordy, 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 Miss Claudia. Girl, you sure look good to me. Well, please don't excite me, baby. No, it can't be me.
All right.
We are so wet, so gospel choir. And you are listening.
Stand by. Here we go.
Five, four, three, two, one,
go.
Always one foot on the ground. And by protecting my heart, truly, I got lost in the sound. I hear in my mind all of these words.
That's Regina Spektor. That's P-E-K-T-O-R. Spektor from the song Fidelity. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM in your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, help you lead a more positively minded life. And today, I'm talking to you about trying to change things with your partner by negotiating, by kind of ask. I mean, here it is, you know, here it is. Imagine you do one of two things. You come home and you say to your mate, you know, I want things to be different around here. How would you like to be the mate who hears that, man or woman? How would you like to be on the other side of that? You know, I want things that things are going to be different. Right? Makes you reach for your Winchester, like they used to say. Well, some people used to say, right? I want things to be different around here. Things are going to be different. Kids have no control over what their parents dictate. When a parent comes to you and says, I am going to make changes, you have no choices. We're going to move. We're going to leave. I'm going to do things different. Your father is gone. You know, you're getting a divorce. No choice. So when somebody says to you, I want things to be different, there are echoes of childhood that said, wait, there was a time when I had no control, and I'm never going to let that happen again. I'm going to be in control of my life so that nobody could ever hurt me like that again. And then someone comes along, your mate comes along and says, I have this thing for you. I have love that I could either offer you or I could pull back. I can either get you, I can either love you or I could pull my love away. Now, love may be sex. You know, I could either sex you or I could pull away. Whatever this negotiation is, it's very primitive. It's very much like you were born. But here it is. It's being tossed in your face and somebody says, that's it. I mean, if you're going to love you or not love you. So a man comes home and he says to his wife, you look dumpy. I'm going to go out with the boys to a strip club. It's a threat. It's a threat. I am going to go and I want you to change physically. I want you to be different physically, or I'm going to withhold my love and bring it elsewhere. Actually, any man who says that probably did already, you know, but it's like by the time you bring it to your mate, it's like it's a threat. And when you threat the withdrawal of love, the only thing you may get is capitulation, and the capitulation has a cost. But just consider this instead. If it's not an impulse, and this is very important now, an impulse for change can either come from exogenous, from the outside of you, or from the inside of you. If it comes from the inside of your body, like your chemistry, it could be that you're just restless, you're just nervous. You're just out of sync. Your hormones are shot. Your neurotransmitters are out. We got a program that we're preparing for you about the dopaminergic brain, which I tell you, my friends, is going to surprise you. Beautiful new work. If you want some advanced information on this, what's his name, Stephanie? The name of the author? Fred Previc. P-R-E-V-I-C. You might want to look it up and read about this. Dopaminergic brain. New phrase. Going to be in my vocabulary. So if you're coming from a place of inside irritation, and that inside irritation or inside desperation is what's leading you to make request changes from your partners, that's another thing you have to know. I'm sorry, you cannot ask based on your personal, internal, or external discomfort. The thing that works is the following. Darling, I care about you. I care about us. There is something about our relationship that is uncomfortable to me. And because of its discomfort, I don't really give myself completely with you. I would like to make this change if possible so I can make us better. I want to make the us of us better. Not the me of us, but the us of us. Wow, what a sales pitch. Because, you know, in effect, it is the me of us who gets better when the us of us gets better. When you have somebody collaborating with you who says, okay, I'm willing to change for the us of us, well, that's both for their sake and for your sake. All right, so let's go back to some of the negotiations. Some things cannot be negotiated. I'm sorry. You could try. Core values, integrity, spirituality, trust. They can't be negotiated. You do your best to separate the interests and concerns from values. You can negotiate your interests, but not your core values or integrity. You can't say to somebody, it's like I have employees who work for me, and sometimes somebody wants to speak with me, and they say he's busy, because I am busy. But I always tell them, never lie for me. Don't tell lies. Don't say, you know, he'll get back to you when you know I might not. If your mate comes to you and says, lie for me, tough thing, especially if your value is never to do a thing like that. The only things you can really negotiate are behavior and decisions. You can negotiate what action someone will take and when they will do it, or you can negotiate a solution to a problem of disagreement. So how do you prepare to negotiate? Okay, ask yourself how you aspire to be during this negotiation. Do you aspire to be calm, open, flexible, honest, understanding, and curious? That's the highest level. There it is. You want to reach for it? You want to go for the top rung? Get this criteria. Calm, open, flexible, honest, understanding, and curious. Now, if I can reach up inside me to find those parts of me, when someone I care about is asking to negotiate with me, I'm going to have a winning negotiation. I know it. But there are things in me that fight this. I don't get so calm when I get confronted. Sometimes I get my back up. But this is what I want to look for. Calm, open, honest, flexible, understanding, and curious. By following these guidelines, I can more easily focus on a successful outcome. Now, this is an often overlooked aspect of negotiation. Staying conscious of your own guide, calm, open, flexible, honest, understanding, and curious. You write those words on a wall. Like we should have them on the wall here in the studio. Good words. Calm, open, flexible, honest, understanding, and curious. Koflachik. I was just trying to make a word out of it. It's often overlooked aspect of negotiating. You write the guidelines on a piece of paper and you keep glancing at them during negotiation. Keep glancing at them. Keep them on a card in front of you. You know, I wish I did this, and every time somebody negotiated with me or tried to negotiate with me, I would look down at the words. I would say, calm, open, flexible, honest, understanding, and curious. If I can't be that, I shouldn't be in that negotiation. I got to find that spot inside me. Imagine if you could get two people who could be that way. Imagine if both people are calm, open, flexible, honest, understanding, and curious. The curious is I'm curious about what you feel. Write the guidelines on a piece of paper. Keep them around. You'll come across like an experienced negotiator simply by staying consistent with your own guidelines. Now, and here, before you start your request, ask these questions. What do I want? Why do I want it? And why is it important? Ask yourself. Don't ask your partner. What do I want? Why do I want it? And why is it important? Number one. Number two. How important is this to me? Number three, to get what I want, what do I need to do and what will my partner need to do? So to get what I want, what will I need to do and what will my partner need to do? Now notice, if whatever you want requires just your partner doing something and you not doing anything, something wrong with that. It should be a collaboration. If I get most of what I want, what is the positive and negative effect on my partner? So let's say you want your partner to get him home for dinner on time, and your partner comes home late every night, right? What's the positive? What's the negative effect on your partner to come home every day on time? Think about it. Think about it. You'll find one. Maybe he can't take that extra walk. Maybe he can't stop the way he wanted to stop before on his way home. You know, maybe he has to be too aware of the clock. Doesn't mean you can't ask for it, but think about it. How can I make it easier for my partner to say yes? It's a terrific question. How can I ask my partner, how can I get them to say yes instead of fighting? However, it may be difficult for my partner to give me most of what I want, and think about this, because try to find a reason why it may be impossible. Now, you might try to think of how can I increase benefits to my partner as a result of this negotiation. Add other relevant information that's not been suggested. You don't need to answer every question and complete everything. But as you get mentally clear about these issues, it becomes easier to conversationally express your concerns and desires. Calm. Got that one? Good word. You want to get yourself calm, open, flexible, honest, understanding, and curious. And if you're not there, it's going to be a mess. It's just going to be a mess, my friends. It's going to become one of those things where you stand and you dig your foot, you dig your heel in the ground like you've done so many times in your life and say, no, I got to have it my way. And you know you've done that so often and you've had so many relationships like that. You know it's not the first time you've ever done it. It doesn't work. Now, another thing in working on negotiation is to start off by stating an area of disagreement. It's important to describe the issue of disagreement instead of as a problem. It is very difficult to say the problem is without blaming your partner. So let's say you don't blame your partner and you take blame out of it. Now, how do you present a problem without putting blame in there? The actual or implied blame always leads to a defensive reaction from one or both parties. When you start a negotiation by blaming your partner, the negotiation begins to slip like a house built on loose gravel. Start the disagreement in this form instead. You know, we seem to have a disagreement about this issue. And you just put it on the table. We seem to have a disagreement about who takes out the garbage. Okay, it starts there. Then take turns expressing your concerns and desires about the very disagreement. What do you feel about that? Well, what do you feel about that? Well, I work hard all day. I don't want to have to take out the garbage. Well, you know, I have a kind of similar kind of feeling, so on and so forth. But there's no blame in here. It's no you. And it's no always and no never. These are the key words that you want to see. If you see you, the word you, appearing over and over again, forget it. You're in a blame mode. And what does blame get you? Nothing except defensiveness. Okay, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about negotiation for solutions. And this is really terrific. Describe concerns about the subject. One person goes first and expresses all their concerns, while the other listens without rebutting or defending anything. You must listen. That's why I like it, writing it down. If you write it down, my friends, you get a chance to really express what you want. And you can see yourself slipping into blame and criticism. So write it out if you can, and write it out before you talk, or just write it out and hand it and say, yeah, I'd like you to read this, and we'll sit and talk about it. Because you want the person to be quiet enough to hear it. But you could tell if you've engendered a defensive response by some you, or an accusation or a blame or something. You could tell, and then nothing happens. They just start talking while you're talking. The only response that a person should have when they are being told about your concerns in a negotiation is to recap and check for understanding. Let me understand, are you really saying that there are some days you would rather wear dungarees you know, and not get dressed up when we go out to dinner? Is that what you're saying? That there are some days you don't want to be concerned about your cleanliness because you don't want to take a shower? Is that what you're saying? Let me just clarify that. Also, you know, you may think you get away with it by doing leading questions that sound like, remember Perry Mason? You know, did it ever occur to you that if you took a shower every day, you'd smell better? Forget it. Forget it. Those are just sneaky. Now, here's where you work. Now here comes the good stuff. You start brainstorming solutions. After each person has expressed all their concerns and desires, and each of you feels understood, it's time for brainstorming solutions. Think of possible solutions. One partner proposes a solution. Honey, you know, what I suggest is... And the other person say, this solution works for me, and it might work for you because. You got these three steps? So now, after you've heard it, you say, all right, here's what I think would work. And it works for me because, and I think it works for you because. Three. And you do this both ways. Here's my solution. It works for me. And if you can't think of a reason that a solution works for the other person, don't even bother. Don't even bother. Because it's got to work. Why would you want something from somebody that would give them absolutely nothing in return? They would just resent you. You know, it encouraged being that this formula of suggesting something and asking for what you get out of it and what they get out of it, it encourages being a good self-advocate. It forces you to consider your partner's perspective. Please consider their perspective. They're not just lumbering idiots. Now, I know some people are insensitive, but give them the credit. They've been around a long time, and if you are at loggerheads, it's only because you're being stubborn in your approach. Now, a response to somebody who makes a suggestion to you is when somebody wants to suggest, well, the part that does work is this, what you said. I will come home. I will take out the garbage at 6 o'clock. The part that doesn't work is this. I'll take it out every day because I'm not home on Tuesdays. I go to my meeting on Tuesdays, you know. So my alternative suggestion is that you take it out on Tuesdays and I'll take it out the other 6 days. But I'll take it out twice on Sundays. Okay, and this suggestion might work for you, for me, because at least I know Tuesday is being taken care of, and it might work for you because you get the other 6 days. Add value to your office. Take action. If action's appropriate, decide who will do what by when, and decide for how long you will try the solution. If it doesn't work, if what you've done doesn't work, after the action phase, come back and evaluate the results. If a few months later you say, you know, how is this working out between us? Let's try it again. If it didn't work out as well as hope, each person begins by saying, honey, it didn't work the way I hoped, but here's what I would have done differently. Here's what I could have done differently, and I didn't do. Don't start by saying your partner should have been doing differently. Don't accuse. Don't point your finger. Then repeat appropriate steps. Don't be discouraged if your first attempts at new negotiation strategies are awkward. Consider learning about yourself. If you need to, consider finding somebody to negotiate in between. Even consider attending a workshop to learn about an approach along with other practical, innovative materials. It's definitely easier to learn what you see demonstrated. But, you know, nowadays very few people have couples who demonstrate very effective, beautiful, terrific communication. Two final rules. A successful negotiator always opens the conversation with the most desirable outcome. That's the first important thing. Every successful negotiator, this is in business and in relationships, starts off with, this is the outcome I see for us. And look how beautiful it is. So you start off with the best possible outcome. And the reminder, the reason I'm doing this, is I want to make us as best possible. I want me to be happy with you. I want you to be happy with me. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Bringing you some ideas. Now, you know, I know a lot of people are going to want to get copies of this, so you can download this program easily. And you can download it, and we could get it to you. Or you could just call my office and we'll send you a copy of it. Mainly, you could download it through the website, thepositivemind.com. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. My special thanks to my helper, Stephanie Dombra, for helping me create and work with this material. Thank you very much.
Ancora qui che spingo rime, l'acqua ne è passata sotto i ponti ma c'è ancora sete di salire in alto, colto nel sapore forte che la inebria, senza trucco viaggia, lete e sobria, portatrice sana di una malattia, dana t'ho scoperta e t'ho fatto mia, carattere difficile, difficile convivere, da trovare un modo per un sano vivere, di lei, con la musica, musa ispiratrice, ninfa che ti illude, tanto ti dà tanto, chi ti conosce lode. Ma quando tu entra dentro ti riempie di sostanze di inebria.
Vedo luce per chi insiste per la strada. Trovo sempre le forze per ciò che credo. Vedo luce per chi insiste per la strada. Trovo sempre le forze per ciò che credo.
È difficile se non trovi il tuo spazio, viverci insieme no non è uno scherzo, è arduo, sei nell'underground, sempre sotto il ground, 100.000 piedi che ti schiacciano, solo perché sei tu il ground, ma quando ci riesci non puoi cambia tutto, come una favola di Biancaneve trovi il risveglio, meglio, ma se non ci riesci torni tu nell'incubo, senza trucco e senza inganno, soluzione momentanea per svoltare il giorno, senza cash. Luce per chi insiste.